The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
I'm here to interview you, Mr. Rogers.
Well, that is what we're doing, isn't it?
Do you consider yourself a hero?
I don't think of myself as a hero. No, not at all. Would you like to meet my special puppet friends from the neighborhood of make-believe?
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we are talking about the 2019 film, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Oh.
Tobin?
Yes.
What is your history with this film?
I really wanted to see it. I missed it in the theater. I bought it cheap on DVD and watched it last night for this podcast.
Excellent.
What about you?
I watched it last night for this podcast. I have so many things to say, but I want to save them for the appropriate
okay.
segment.
Okay. All right. Good.
I rented it. You had offered to...
So I was supposed to send you the DVD and I never did.
No. I was going to say you offered to mail it to me and I said, that's silly. I shall rent it. And I did.
And you did. Yes. Did you know anything about it going in? I mean, you knew it was about Mr. Rogers, but...
Matthew Reese was in it because I like to keep a sharp eye.
Yes.
On what that beautiful Welshman is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I'm a big fan of the Americans.
Yes. Right. Yep.
So I was glad to see him. But again, I want to get into it when it's time to get into it. Let us first talk about two bits of film history, please.
Okay.
Please, right, I don't know. I'm very excited to have you read these to me. I didn't read them in anticipation.
So the only Oscar nomination for this movie was for Tom Hanks for Best Supporting Actor. There was at one point a thought that it might have a bunch of Oscar nominations. It was sort of in the discussion leading up to the Oscars this year. He lost that to Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But Hanks won Best Supporting Actor at the AARP Movies for Grownups Awards.
Now know what I need to stream next year during awards season.
There's a movie podcast that I love called This Had Oscar Buzz, if you don't listen to, you must. And they talk about movies that had Oscar buzz, but then got no nominations. That's sort of their wheelhouse. And some of them are good and most of them are not good, but for sometimes interesting reasons. And they get into a lot of tangents about the Oscars of that year or that person's trajectory or the person who should have been nominated or whatever. And they often talk about the AARP Movies for Grown-Up Awards and they do games kind of like we do, but anyway, that's where I knew to look for that. The other bit of film history is that the production designer, Jade Healy, who was responsible for all the sets and costumes and all that, but particularly the models that they built for transitions between scenes. There's a couple of wonderful interviews with the production designer, and I just wanted to read a couple sentences that I think sum up the way they work together to build that. She says, we wanted to show a side of humanity that was ugly and beautiful. The miniatures had a rough around the edges quality, and that was important to us because we wanted to show the roughness. That's what life is. That's what humanity is. It was important for Mr. Rogers to show that it's okay to show your feelings, that it's okay to be sad, that it's okay to make a movie that has these little rough around the edges elements, which I never really thought about the intentionality behind the kind of rough looking, but also very comforting.
I mean, it fit sets. Because it's always looked old to me, even as a kid, right? Mm-hmm. It looked, when I say dated, I don't mean it with judgment, but it looked,
right.
So that's interesting. I, I feel like I would like to talk more to the, like, the artists and technicians and people who put those things together. And speaking of Oscars, it's sometimes in those speeches. Mm-hmm. Was it costumes for Mad Max that then the lady did a whole climate change and water conservation speech? You know, like,
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
That you might be a costume nerd, mm-hmm. but you're also mm-hmm. have all these other things, just in the same way that, like, a director is going to choose a project based on their own personal whatever. I like the unfolding of each of the people involved. So I like that. Thank you. I have mm-hmm. to say, audience, I'm very distracted watching Tobin right now because it's clear that he has had a haircut.
I did. I had a haircut.
I have not.
It looks great, though. Your hair looks great.
It's rough out there.
This is a reminder that we can see each other now when we record this, which we didn't use. So a reminder to our, I said, your hair looks great. And then it's a reminder to our audience that we can see each other as we record now, which was not always the case.
And ourselves.
Ourselves, yes. I did have a haircut. We all wore masks and I had my temperature taken at the door and had to wait in my car until they called me in. And it
sounds like a better system anyway.
I actually kind of like it.
I can get my delightfully trashy nails back on. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm counting the days.
Then you'll know you've made it back.
Yes, not to make light. I apologize for making light. No. I appreciate that those two bits. Thank you. And
yes.
Apologies for my distractions.
Not at all.
No one has an attention span anymore. So
nope. Least of all us. Aislinn, who were the ladies in charge in this movie? Women involved in major roles in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
You know, there are many, and I hate to even say that I practiced the names once because it's still not going to go well, but I'm not going to look at Tobin while I say them, and that won't help.
This is always when I get nervous that I've mistyped one of them.
Could be. We'll see.
Okay.
And I forget, are you adding dings?
Add a ding. Next time I'm going to bring my bell in, like a real physical bell, and I'll just do a bell, but I don't have it with me here, so.
Okay. I'll leave dings.
Just leave some space, yeah.
Space for the dingle. Okay. Director, Muriel Heller. Actors, Susan Kelechi Watson, Mary Ann Plunkett, Wendy McKenna, Tammy Blanchard, Carmen Cusack, and the incomparable Christine Lottie.
Indeed.
A fave of Tobin's, yeah? Am I making that up?
Not particularly. I mean, I like her, but not in the pantheon for me.
I thought that was like you and Munier had a Christine Lottie thing.
It would seem that way. It would fit. It would fit.
It fits the mold.
It's a Marcia Gay Harden, Laura Linney,
Joan Allen.
Yeah.
Angie Harmon.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Producers, Leah Holzer and Wenjin Shi. Editing, Anne McCabe. Casting, Abby Kaufman. Production designer, Jade Healy, and set decoration, Marissa Lombardo.
Hey, very nice.
I do have a question. I asked you once, like 7 years ago over text, and I didn't get an answer.
Ooh, dear.
With casting, I feel like Abby Kaufman, and then there's one that's an Allison. Are those humans or are those agencies?
Great question. They're humans.
Okay.
But they are sort of institutions. I mean,
sure. But like a law firm that would be Jones, Moyers and Bunns. And there are Jones, Moyers and Bunns, but there are also other people that are working for them. Oh,
that's Abby Kaufman.
Tobin is showing her to me. Mm-hmm. Also could fit the mold.
Yeah. Yes, true. Totally. And Abby Kaufman is like, I mean, she's
the one.
Go on and on. I mean, it's Brokeback Mountain and, you know.
All the things.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
Tobin, I think it's very important that you give us a synopsis, and I'll tell you more about why when we start talking, but let's set the stage.
Okay, let's see how I do. Investigative journalist, new parent, and troubled soul Lloyd Vogel, played by everyone's second favorite Welshman, Matthew Rhys, is assigned to write a profile of the one and only Mr. Fred Rogers, played by who else? Tom Hanks. Convinced there must be some...
No, I wasn't even looking at you. I was giving you space.
No, it's entirely my own. Yeah. Convinced there must be some hidden darkness lurking under Fred's earnest, compassionate persona and struggling with pain and trauma in his own life, Lloyd's interactions with the children's TV star eventually unearth his own deeply buried humanity and set him on a course of healing and profound self-acceptance. It's not about putting on a false smile or pretending it's always a bright, sunny day. It's about honoring your own feelings and finding ways to express and work through them without doing harm to yourself or anyone else.
Okay. Here's what I want to say. I want to start with something.
Okay.
I think I'm going to have to separate some things a little bit in this in terms of our charge that we've given ourselves and talking about a movie.
Okay.
I should say I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a father, a son,
a Holy Ghost,
a man. Okay. And so there's certainly interesting aspects of all of that that I know that I don't understand, but I'm glad to potentially understand a little bit more. And then I have other great, like, nice things to say about it. But the first thing that came to mind was I get why, in general, what I've heard from just random people is not entirely positive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a weird movie. Like, if someone says incorrectly, do you want to watch this movie about Mr. Rogers? I can see why people are disappointed or, like, not sure. And what it reminds me of, but not the outcome, is a little bit like Magic Mike, in that there's that, oh, do you want to see a movie about male strippers? But really, it's about something else. Mm-hmm. In that case, though, I think it made everyone happy. I think if people go in either with understanding of kind of truly what it's about, or if you don't have that understanding, but you've sat down to watch it, I would say push through. It's an excellent movie, but it wasn't what I expected. And if you want a movie about Mr. Rogers, watch the documentary. I think they pair nicely together, but it's a weird movie.
It's funny. So I was on Tom Hanks. Were we doing another cruise? I can't remember. I was doing a cruise or Hanks. No, Hanks, because it was. Sorry. I was on the Tom Hanks podcast, Hanks for the Memories, and doing Charlie Wilson's War, and mentioned that we would be doing this movie, and that I had not yet seen it. And Joey's comment was that it was weird. This is good. It's a weird movie.
Oh no, I had the same comment Joey did.
Don't sound so disheartened. I knew going in, because having talked to students who'd seen it and read reviews, that, you know, knowing that it was not a biopic of Fred Rogers, that it was the journalist's story. So I at least knew that going in. There was some formal weirdness in terms of the way that the thing is told through a Mr. Rogers episode, as though which is weird, which is, you know.
And then, like, you were talking about the set design, but like the airplane, you go to the airplane, and the, it felt a little bit like a musical to me, in the weird, like, pardon the reference, but like Inception-y, dreamy sequence in the middle. Yeah. I was just like, it was, anyway, go on.
Yeah, no, totally. And I look, bottom line, I don't love this movie. I admire a lot in this movie, and I think that the criticisms of it are, I think they're sort of, they're legitimate criticisms of the movie. I kind of like the fact that it's not a here's Mr. Rogers becoming Mr. Yeah. Rogers, and like it's coming at him from kind of a side angle. It's a different movie, yeah. and I think that that movie as a, if Mr. Rogers at the center of that movie in a fictional sense would be mm-hmm. kind of insufferable or sure. easily insufferable, as sure. opposed to throwing someone who's sort of against Mr. Rogers mm-hmm. and finding out how Mr. Rogers absorbs that person and they come out differently.
So, yeah, I agree. I thought that because there are several times too that like the social anxiety part mm-hmm. of me was just like, from both sides, mm-hmm. like you couldn't see my face, folks. I made a face of anxiety.
It's a good face.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Either of the way that Lloyd approached Fred, mm-hmm. whether I was like, oh, geez, or the way Fred responded back, if I was identifying with Lloyd in that moment, mm-hmm. like there were a lot of like, oh God, mm-hmm. why did you say that? Mm-hmm. What I, again, not a man in any way, but the part that I think identified with most at the beginning was Lloyd's skepticism. Mm-hmm. Because when I watched the documentary, in this world where so many of the people we admire mm-hmm. have turned out to be flawed in ways that I find so personally sad. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say that.
Yeah.
That I, even in the documentary, even knowing that wasn't what it was going to be, I was waiting for the documentary to turn.
Right.
And for
right.
this guy to be a creepster.
Right.
And knowing that that wasn't going to happen, but I had that, like, this has the setup of mm-hmm. going very, very right, badly.
Right.
So I got like that part of Lloyd, I totally got at right. the beginning because right. I, even knowing, even in my universe, I had the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think their scenes were the movie's about the two of them, but like when they were talking, despite the anxiety, were sort of my favorite.
Yeah.
Aspects of it.
The there's a scene in a diner. Mm-hmm. Sort of in the middle or just past the middle of the movie where Fred says, sit with me in silence for a minute. Mm-hmm. And the audience or the people in the diner all go silent too. And the movie goes silent for a full 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the camera's pushing in on Lloyd as he's trying to deal with this. And it pushes in on Fred. And then Fred looks right at us.
Yeah.
And it just brings us into that moment. And I'm imagining watching it in the movie theater with a crowd and what that would be like to sit in silence with the actor looking at you through the screen, you know, and yeah. how that puts us in Lloyd's point of view in that moment. And I had the same feeling of those scenes being the most potent ones in the movie.
Well, and for someone so familiar, I mean, we can talk about the impersonation, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at because I want to get the last name correct too. Enrico Colantoni, who is Bill, the handler that they took from the governor's yes. office. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Veronica Mars' dad. Rico.
Oh, right.
So I just a quick little shout out that I think he's so fantastic. And I thought I also thought, okay, is he the creep? Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but in a movie full of men, many of whom are actual people, I was trying to spot the creep.
right. So, spot the creep is the name of the game.
Game to play. And it gave us one, right? The, you know,
Chris Cooper.
I was like, old men you love. You know, and was Chris Cooper, did he also play the mailman?
No.
Okay. That was just a figment of my imagination.
There was one in the dream sequence. He does for one shot.
Okay. But not that first time we see him.
Mr. McFeely is played by a different actor in the rest of the thing.
Gotcha. This is what I mean. I'm not a creepy dream sequence is not my favorite storytelling mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah. They're so often so cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's such an interesting pairing while we're on Chris Cooper.
Yeah.
That he's, because he's the, you know, he's the dad in this, and then he's the neighbor in Little Women in a very, very different role. But the same year, right? Playing father figures of two very different kinds. Yeah, in the same year. It's like the range of that man is really, really amazing.
Good for Chris Cooper.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So what did you think of the Hanks of it all?
I mean, I think you use the phrase American treasure more than I do, or you have. I've heard it. I think National it's treasure. Undeniable that Tom Hanks is a gift to us all, as is Rita Wilson. Let's be
absolutely
honest about it. And it was one of those. It was I think a heavily publicized casting decision.
Yep.
And once you hear that, it's like, oh, of course. I mean, who else?
Yeah.
Having seen the documentary somewhat recently and then watching some of the tidbits that they showed in the movie, like watching the actual clips and other things, I do think he did a great job. But all that kind of research has been recent, so I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Without knowing very much, it felt authentic to me. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of calm, open presence is unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A lot for people. And I really liked the way the kind of the in-group, out-group a little bit of like the folks on the set all knew. And I knew who he was, what he was going to be like, how long it's going to take for him to talk to this person or that person.
Right.
And not in a disrespectful way, but like the kind of mystique was gone for them. And it was just, this is our, we're in his world versus people from the outside for whom he was a different kind of character. Mm-hmm. And I liked seeing that. That felt pretty true. And I would be, taken aback if someone so calmly but persistently asked me the next question and the next question to get to whatever it was that they felt was the nugget. The interaction I think I loved the best was Mr. Rogers and Andrea, that is Lloyd's wife, that first he calls at like 5 a.m. or whatever and says, oh, Andrea, I'm so sorry. And then she's like, Mr. Rogers knows my name. And then much later when he's at the house with the whole family and he asks her a fairly personal question about how are you feeling about daycare and this, and that she says, you're not the only one who gets to talk to Mr. Rogers.
Yes.
I loved that. And as kind of the main female in the film, I really liked the fun she was, that character, and that the actress was able to have with it. I don't know her well. I've seen a few episodes of This Is Us. My understanding is that she's a beloved character on that program as well.
Oh, okay.
In that similar in the premise of I'm in love with a man who's searching for something and has potential daddy issues. So yeah, I liked her. I don't know. I sort of went off and on a tangent there.
Yeah. I, in thinking about the things of the movie that didn't work as well, I was trying to put together what it was about the daddy issue stuff that I didn't, that didn't connect with me the way I think the movie wanted it. And I don't know if it's that they're, oh gosh, Did it feel at all a little expected? Like,
sure.
There weren't a lot of surprises to me in the arc of that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's meant to be that it's the uniqueness of Fred Rogers and the interactions that Lloyd has with Fred that mm-hmm. makes it different then. Mm-hmm. But you felt like you could kind of pluck out the father-son stuff and put it in any other movie and it would sort of work its way out the same. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I guess, and this feel free to take out, a little part of me, I had a little bit of like, okay, boomer, on it, because I think that attitude of like, regardless of anything that's happened, now this person is at the end of their life and is repenting and we must gather around them because that is what you do. And absolutely, if that's what you feel like you should do mm-hmm. or you are driven to do, but I also want people to have permission to not re-engage with something that's toxic and unhealthy and potentially abusive. That we don't know that, right? We don't know nearly enough about it, but that is also okay. And mm-hmm. it seems like a somewhat of a generational, maybe sort of obligation is not the right word, because again, it's absolutely, if that's what you feel like you should do, do it. But yes, I agree with you that there were no sort of surprises there. I mean, I was surprised that they drove to wherever Jerry's house was. But that, to all, can I say, mm-hmm. I also kind of didn't like, because I wanted Mr. Rogers to be there for Lloyd. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily want Mr. Rogers to be there for Jerry. Mm-hmm. That's a really mean thing. Apparently, I'm not a... Jerry's not redeemable for me.
Well, also we don't get a... We get... Oh, gosh. I don't know. Maybe that there's not the specificity in the... Mm. Our understanding of what happened between mm-hmm. Jerry and Lloyd and what's her name? What's the Jerry's? Sister. No, the mom.
Oh, Dorothy.
Dorothy, well,
I
yes.
don't know the mom. Dorothy's his Dorothy companion the sister? Of 15 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I meant the mom. The
yeah.
I don't know. A part of me feels bad dragging this movie at all, because I think it is made with so much compassion and so much earnestness, and it's mm-hmm. it's so smart about so many things. Sure. But I wanted to love it. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to love it, and I didn't love it.
And in terms of what I'm going to watch again, it's going to be the documentary.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Right.
And I mean, still, it sticks with me, the last sort of scene with the representative from the, you know, Rogers Foundation now talking about creativity and individuality and you know, those kind of higher goals that mm-hmm. for some are icing on the cake and for Mr. Rogers are foundational to humans.
To humanity,
And so when he, you know, all the stuff about... The stuff that crosses over is the stuff I liked. So everyone feels mad. Everyone feels sad. It's what you do with it. And that's, there are a lot of things that I say to people like that I'm working with that are similar, mm-hmm. right? I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. This is the situation you're in. We can't change that, but we can change, you know, the work we do now and, you know, kind of whatever. If someone feels like they have made a mistake, okay. We have an opportunity to change the pattern and change, you know, so all that kind of stuff. And that the kids are, I liked the Oprah bit, which seemed a little bit like Oprah was asking the wrong questions. but of like, well, the kids are right here. You can learn from them. You can ask them. You can, it's not this versus thing that they're all humans too. And so like, all that stuff I loved. But and everyone acted it well, but I just yeah, I agree. You can lift out the Lloyd and Jerry narrative and.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. I do think that the movie itself, and when I say that, in my mind, I'm talking about the scenes between Lloyd and Fred. But the movie itself is made with the kind with the intention behind the movie feels like the same kind of radical compassion that Mr. Rogers himself exhibited. Mm-hmm. So. It's not, you know, the range of emotions is broad. Mm-hmm. They are presented to you directly. Mm-hmm. It's not coy in the way it looks, in the way it's, I mean, having that dream sequence in there, having this weird thing where the, where
it
Mr. Rogers
with
comes
that picture
out
of Lloyd with his face,
you know,
smash
up. Here's all the, and here's my friend Lloyd. And you go into this picture. It's like, we were in a Mr. Rogers recreation. And now this picture is like the dissonance of that. It's all just presented to us in a way that's like, here's this person in pain. And, you know, so I admire the craft of that. And maybe it's I don't know that Lloyd is the best way into Mr. Rogers because, and again, that's not the point of the movie is more about Lloyd than it is about Mr. Rogers. And, fine. That's fine. And like I said, I don't want the, here's how Mr. Rogers started and here's scenes with his kids and, you know, but I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of repeating myself.
Yes, I agree with what you said. Not that you're repeating yourself, but that reminded me of the other aspect that I really did like was the, was Joanne, his wife, Joanne,
Marianne Plunkett. Marianne Plunkett's the actor.
Oh, that's why I'm getting confused.
Now we're gonna look it up.
Joanne. I was right. The Marianne threw me. I loved that every sentence Mr. Rogers said had Joanne in it or said we. And that he was taking all those pictures for her.
Yes, I love
he
that.
Right, but he was.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, you know, I don't know if every week he got things to... developed or what, and him, you know, showing her all the people that he met.
Yes, yes.
And then the interactions between Lloyd and Joanne.
Yes.
Because you get, but, you know, Lloyd is still trying to get at what is this thing.
Yes, yes.
And she's in such a unique position to truly know him like 360. So Lloyd is trying to like use her as a source, but then she's kind of spouting a similar line that he would, I don't know. I really liked that piece too. And I am more interested in what is the Rogers family like? How do you grow up being a kid of Mr. Rogers or being the wife of Mr. Rogers or, you know, so those were more interesting to me than Lloyd, like growing up and getting, not getting over because that's not what I'm trying to say, but like processing what he needs to process in order to be free of it.
Right.
Because again, that is a movie, any movie about any man, I can get that story out of, right? I wonder too, though, whose decision it was and how, I mean, we talk about mismarketing a lot. But like you put Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers on the front cover.
Yeah.
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I don't understand because that is not the movie.
Yeah.
So again, is it so smart or was it an incorrect kind of set of choices?
Well, the movie didn't do very well. So.
Right.
And whether that's because people didn't want to go see a movie that's you know, Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers, you know, whether they didn't want to go see the movie that was marketed, or they should have marketed this movie differently to a different kind of crowd. I mean, we should talk about Mariel Heller and sort of the arc of her career, the director of the movie.
Yes, please tell me more. I don't know her.
Mariel Heller, was Diary of a Teenage Girl her first movie or her? She's 1 year younger than I am. Diary of a Teenage Girl, and then her other big movie was Can You Ever Forgive Me from the year before with Melissa McCarthy and Richard Grant. Yes. And both of those are rough edged.
Yeah. So this really does fit with that.
It really fits in it. Like, she is the perfect person to make this movie. It's just that I don't know, this movie is the one that I want to be made, you know? Yeah. But that's why it feels so weird. She's a indie director who makes, you know, who sort of follows her own vision and makes unapologetic movies. Sometimes those unapologetic movies are about bad people behaving badly. Sometimes they're about good people behaving badly. Sometimes they're about good and bad people behaving good. I mean, they just are, you know, the edges aren't sanded off these movies. Mm-hmm. And so that's, it fits in that kind of, you know, in the way that comes together. It's just, I just am not. Yes. So it fits. It fits. I count myself a big fan of hers. This is not like, this is my God, this is this big misstep, because I think that I don't think the problems in this movie are in the directing of the movie. I think it has to do with the conception of the story and the way that story is, you know, our way in and all that kind of stuff is just a little bland. But what she teased out in terms of the performances, I mean, it's not Matthew Reese's fault that his or Chris Cooper's, that their storyline leaves me a little cold. I think it's maybe the writing. I think it's maybe the choice of narrative as opposed to the performances. And so I'm looking forward. And the reason I suggested we do this movie of her three films is because it was the newer one that I hadn't seen. And I thought, oh, well, this is great. And we have like a Cage Club connection because they're doing the Tom Hanks thing. And, you know, like, it felt like we could sort of, and we should have done one of the other movies, I think. Cause I just think that they're more directly successful to her. It's a better, full expression of who she is as a filmmaker. I think those first two movies.
Having seen only one of those two, I can't agree or disagree, other than to say that I think the other two have more that we could talk about in terms of women in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Or, you know, fearless performances, fearless characters. But that's not what we did. We did this.
I'm
glad I saw it.
Yeah, me too.
What did you think of the Hanks of it all?
I think Hanks is great. I think that that he is able to. I mean, no surprise. Hot take of all hot takes. Tom Hanks is great. I think that he is, as we said at the beginning, who else plays this role? I mean, there's nobody else, I think, who could. They do this. They do this game on the Hanks and Cruise. Podcasts where they say, we watch a Tom Cruise movie and then you imagine, could Tom Hanks play this role? And then you watch a Tom Hanks movie and you imagine, could Tom Cruise play this role? Tom Cruise could not play this role. This is not one that would fit. So, you know, you need your contemporary Jimmy Stewart. You need a character who you would believe is truly fundamentally decent.
Yeah.
And to almost superhuman decency. Although Joanne makes the point, he's not superhuman. It's not like, it takes work. He is practices this.
And I like that.
He has a temper. He has to, like, that he wrestles with these things. And I think that I think he was a perfect choice. There's a little bit of I spend some time in the movie thinking, oh, look, that's a great impression of Mr. Rogers, and I kind of want to go watch Mr. Rogers. I do have to tell, that reminds me of one story I do have to tell. So last year, I think about the time this movie was coming out, one night we were looking for something to watch with the kids, and we thought, okay, well, let's watch. I was like, I want to show them Little Mr. Rogers. Like they don't know Mr. Rogers, and they're 6 and 8. Mm-hmm. And so I found a Mr. Rogers episode where Mr. Rogers has a, there's a football player for the Pittsburgh Steelers who apparently was this really good receiver or something for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he came, so Mr. Rogers showed clips of him in playing football and then went to meet him at his ballet class. Aww. And so it was sort of both things my kids were interested in at the time, yeah. ballet and football, and sort of combined. And they, and I was a little worried that my older child would not be, would not be as into it. And they both loved it. And it opened up the world. And I was like watching just this regular episode of Mr. Rogers was choking back tears in the back of the room as Mr. Rogers is just slowly and compassionately and with interest unpacking things that they're coming across and talking about. And it's just like, it's just this gaping hole in society that's not, you know, that's what this movie made me really want to do is go back and watch more Mr. Rogers with my kids and not, or just me. And you can find most seasons on Amazon Prime. And so that's sort of what I wanted to do. Like that's what the movie moved me to do, not to watch it again, but to go watch some actual Mr. Rogers. So I think Hank's, you know, and there were times where it didn't feel like a impersonation, and it felt, I think mostly when he wasn't on the set, like when he was on the set, because since it's burned into my memory, you know, Mr. Rogers and what he was like and what he sounded like and how he, you know, from growing up watching Mr. Rogers, that when he was off the set is when he would, I feel like Hanks kind of flew with the role, so 5 stars, Tom Hanks.
Speaking of Tom Hanks, to bring it back to the times that we're in right now.
Yeah.
What would Mr. Rogers say about the pandemic? You know, I mean, one, I think he would talk about masks as not unlike Dan Levy.
Yes, I saw this.
This is kindness. This is right.
It's a gesture of kindness.
Yes.
This is you taking care of the people around you.
Yeah. And showing them that you care about them.
And he would do some fun design on it. Like he'd say, look, you can color it and you can, you know, do this and that. And you listen to the helpers and, you know, you don't have to solve the whole thing. You get to just take care of your part of it. And you might have people in your life who are sick and you might lose people. And, you know, but they're not really gone. They're like, you know, he'd do the whole, like, it would be what we need. It would be all the things. Oh, God. At least we've, you know, and that's what I think the other reason that I became so emotional watching Mr. Rogers with my kids was thinking that they don't have a daily dose of this.
Yeah.
Like their generation, there's now several generations of kids who've not had Mr. Rogers, you know, 4 days a week after school or however often it would play, you know, now that there are a million channels and apps and, you know, and I don't want to be the person who's like, oh, technology's ruining it. I just Mr. Rogers, I just miss Mr. Rogers is really
but
what
because
it is.
Of the everything we have access to, like you say, a lot of the seasons are available, so you can go back and find those particular ones that.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite aspect of Mr. Rogers as a kid of the show?
I remember an episode where they, so I've got two answers. One, I remember an episode where they, which is apparently a very beloved episode. I learned as I was looking up one to show my kids, an episode of going to a crayon factory, to a Crayola factory, and the seeing how like the process of how crayons were made. I still have such vivid memories of the machine sorting the colors and all the, and then rewatching the episodes, I recognized things that I had internalized, but not but didn't remember. Like, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you said Mr. Rogers, what's your favorite episode? I would say the Crayon episode. But then watching it, it was like that, the thing that Hanks got so well, the stillness, mm-hmm. the interest, the, like, you see him processing a thought before he speaks, mm-hmm. and looking at us and inviting us in to observe the things he's seeing, and that kind of calm engagement in the world and mm-hmm. your own feelings was, I realized that's something that I had absorbed without sort of remembering.
Unconsciously.
Yeah. What about you? What do you have memories of Mr. Rogers at all?
I do. I had my version of the crayon one is the magazine one. And
oh,
so
really?
Yeah, when they first showed that, I was like, I saw this episode. And then the other stuff I always liked when he was making something in the place, like the sound was always like good construction paper mm-hmm. and like, I don't know, the sounds and the kind of just watching him make things I really liked. I was not ever as much of a fan of the puppet part. Like mm-hmm. I remember, because he would do a thing or they would go somewhere or have a guest and then the train would go by and you'd go into the puppet part. And that wasn't what drew me in.
Right.
So I'm glad that it wasn't a lot about that.
Yeah. What's interesting. So the other thing now that you mentioned that I remember is that while my kids have not watched Mr. Rogers, they have watched a lot of Daniel Tiger.
A ton of Daniel Tiger. Yeah.
And so especially for my then 5-year-old, I guess she was 5 when we were watching it, the cognitive dissonance of seeing those characters as puppets in the thing and like, wait,
as like antique puppets.
Yes, yes. Is this weird retrofitting, how does this all fit kind of thing? But now I remember that so that's their deeper connection to it is through Daniel Tiger. I did think that was the scene where Lloyd watches Fred do the puppet and sing mm-hmm. and it just sticks on the two of them. It's mm-hmm. I thought that was wonderful. And then when Fred brings the puppets to the or he gets at his apartment.
Lloyd just can't do it.
Can't do it. And like, I get it. Like,
yeah,
I get that. But then Hanks is like, or you know, Fred is looking at the puppet and turns like the puppet continues to be its own character in the scene until he takes it off his hand.
Yeah.
And like, that's weird and funny, and but also feels so, you know, sort of right and specific to the moment. I kind of want just like a cut of this movie that's just the Lloyd and Fred stuff, and then mm-hmm. the last scene with Fred alone in the studio as he mm-hmm. walks to the piano and everyone else has disappeared from the set and the camera pulls back and the lights go out and he plays and then bangs the low keys and mm-hmm. like you can see him doing some of the processing that he does mm-hmm. in that he describes in the rest of the movie. I did think that was a great kind of grace note at the end of the movie.
Yeah. And I think the way that the music, like the scoring of it fit was on theme with Mr. Rogers of it all mm-hmm. in the same way that it's parallel to the way that they did the miniature sets for the airplanes and stuff, that it was always a little bit of Mr. Rogers episode, but also not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Puppets just reminds me, do you remember the, like antique, but I don't know, like seemed to be high end puppets at Munyer's house.
Oh, sure. Sure.
I thought they were related to the Mr. Rogers puppets.
Yes.
Like that, obviously, if Mr. Rogers had some, then Munyer would have some, too.
Yeah.
Like it was just, of course.
The same vintage. I mean, they had the same kind mm-hmm. of fur, the same. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Yep, yep, yep. And, like, more lifelike. Like, you go mm-hmm. to a toy store today to buy puppets, and they're almost like, it's a skunk.
But
it's like it's like a cartoon. Well, because I go with kids to stores. I love puppets. So I look at the puppets. But it's like they're like, it's a cartoon alligator. It's a cartoon cat, you know. And these were like, I remember Munyer had one of them, you know, was it a wire-haired terrier? Must have been like a dog. Mm-hmm. That looked like a dog. That you're putting your hand up in and you're like, oh, there's a little uncanny valley to those animals that I think of now as charming. That was also a little scary.
They're a little creepy. Yeah, they're a little creepy. As a lot of like antique doll stuff, I think, is at some point in childhood.
That is on brand for antique dolls. Yeah.
Hey, Tobin.
Hey, Aislinn.
Do you want to play a game?
Desperately.
As viewers of the film will know, the assignment that Esquire gave Lloyd at the beginning was to ask Mr. Rogers some questions. They're doing an issue on heroes, and they are highlighting a lot of people, but just want 400 words on heroes, and it turned into something very different. But Tobin, I would like you to name for me a few, let's say 3 to 5 heroes.
Okay.
Real people. Consider heroes that you would either write a film about or write a book about or make a film about.
Ooh, wow. Can they be from like any time in history?
Any gender identity.
Oh boy. Okay. Can they living or dead? Okay. So I'm going to say, shall I go in order of, I'm going to say Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Okay.
And who's on the wall behind me. Yeah.
Lived with you intermittently throughout their life.
Yes.
Give us a little bit of who is that.
Eleanor of Aquitaine was the only woman ever to be queen of France and England in the 12th century. She's King Richard's mother, if you are familiar with Robin Hood and King Richard and all that. And she engineered her own divorce, retained her land, and started the empire that became England in 1153. So...
Excellent. That's a great hero.
Love her. Jeanette Rankin. The first woman elected to the U.S. Congress, elected before women had the right to vote, elected from the great state of Montana.
Voted against participating in both World War I and World War II.
The only person to vote against both. The only person to vote against World War II. a committed pacifist. Okay, I'm going to go with another woman. Since given our podcast, I'm going to say Rosalind Franklin, who discovered DNA but was cheated out of the notoriety, the rewards, the accolades, the credit by a couple of dudes. And then I do need to pick a filmmaker. A hero of mine is Steven Soderbergh. I'm gonna go with an old fave.
Excellent. And now
I'm nervous. That was the easy part, I'm guessing.
Just because of the game, I am going to take one out.
Okay. One is eliminated before entering the ring.
Oh, it's so tough, though. Okay, no, I won't. We'll just make it Shakespearean. So.
Oh, Shakespeare.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, for those heroes. I encourage folks to think of all the heroes in their lives. on this network, they have highlighted a number of, let's say, fantastic actors.
Okay.
You've given me some heroes.
Okay. Oh.
I'm going to, looking through the Cage Club annals,
yes.
I'm going to pull out actors highlighted on the Cage Club Podcast Network.
Yeah.
And then have you cast.
I should have chosen different heroes because people would know who these people are. But anyway, okay. Yeah. Okay.
People fair enough. Should know who these people
they
are.
They should know. Damn it. They should. They'll know now. Okay. Now, am I casting guests or actors as these people?
Actors. I'm going to give you. There are right and wrong answers.
Okay. All right.
Start with one of my favorites.
Okay.
Jeanette Rankin.
Yes.
So if you had the choice between Charlize Theron and Winona Ryder, both actors highlighted in Cage Club podcasts.
Right.
Who would you choose for Jeanette Rankin?
For Jeanette Rankin, I would say Winona Ryder.
And why?
I think that you could get a miniseries made with Winona Ryder as the lead. No, but I think that there is a an earnestness to Winona. There is a kind of, I don't know, there's a, Charlize has a kind of, she does Dior ads and stuff, you know, and and she's Furiosa. And I just feel like there's a register that Winona Ryder operates in. It's a little quirky. That's a little, you know, but determined. And I think that that would fit Jeanette Rankin really well.
Quirky, determined. I'm putting it down. Winona.
All right. Are you going to tell me if I got it right or not till the end? You said that's a wrong answer.
True. And I would say I agree with your assessment there.
Okay.
Here's where it's going to be tougher, I think.
Ooh.
Eleanor of Aquitaine. Is that going to be Kate Winslet or Charlize Theron?
Oh, okay. So here's the thing about Eleanor of Aquitaine. So the history of – so Eleanor was wife to two kings, both of whom at – different times in their lives really despised her. The history of the time was written by the court historians for the kings of France and England who did not like her. And so she was, you know, written quite poorly about. She was also like the church was really not a fan of Eleanor. She came from part of France that where women could inherit property. Okay. So anyway, that's we're getting way off topic here. But anyway, so therefore the contemporary historians wrote very unfairly, I think, about her. However, the one thing they all said was she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Like what? They kept saying, like, you could say whatever you want about her. She's the spawn of the devil, but she's gorgeous and was thought of that as so for her entire, like, and she lived to 90 something at a time when most people lived to 30. So anyway, so because of that, I think you have to probably cast the Dior commercial woman because I think she has to sort of carry that. However, I think Kate Winslet would be really good too. But so I'm going to say Charlize Theron.
Okay. Excellent.
Who knew we'd be against so much sort of European Middle Ages history in this episode about Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
I have the pilot for a mini series about Eleanor of Aquitaine written if anybody out there has money and wants to make it. So,
I mean, I want to make it. I've always wanted to make a mini series with you. I don't have any money.
Okay. Well, let me know when you do.
Hey, thanks. Look at that. And I mean, gosh, Steven Soderbergh, this is tough because there are so many white men that have had podcasts directed at them. So I'm going to give you a choice of three and you're going to tell me why. We're
going
to go back to the classics and we're going to say, in your Steven Soderbergh movie, would Nicolas Cage play Soderbergh? Would Keanu Reeves play Soderbergh? Or would Shia LaBeouf play Soderbergh?
Oh, man. I think that Cage is too out there.
Okay.
So it's down to between Shia and Keanu. Now, Shia is maybe a little young unless you're doing early. And it might be interesting to do early Soderbergh, like Soderbergh at 25, he makes Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Like that could be kind of interesting. Or the middle part of his – middle of the early part. And so, okay, that's a possibility. However, it's because of Soderbergh that they're making a second Bill and Ted – a third Bill and Ted movie. It's Soderbergh's – he had a hand in that. He's friends with Ed Solomon. They made Mosaic together, the writer of Bill and Ted, one of the co-writers. So, but I'm going to say Shia because I think I'd like to see the Soderbergh of the post, post Sex on a videotape, struggling Soderbergh. Yeah.
Interesting. I like it. Okay. Yeah. Well, based on my just quick scan, we're a little bit out of women. So I'm going to let you pick who would play Rosalind Franklin, regardless of Cage Club history. Ooh. If you could cast anyone.
You know what? I'm kind of tempted to choose, when you mentioned it, I'm kind of tempted to choose Kate Winslet.
I think
she'd be great. I mean, there's an age thing a little bit, but like, when has that stopped us before? I think she's, I think Kate Winslet, I think, can play a wider range of ages than a lot of people, don't you think?
Yes. Maybe
because she started so young, like we think of her as young. Anyway, I think she'd be a great Rosalind Franklin. So I'll go with that, Kate Winslet.
Awesome. Well, thank you for helping.
Keanu would be fun too, but that's a different movie.
I thought about that, but I didn't want to. There's some Like It Hot.
Yes.
Bosom Buddies. There's White Chicks. You know, I didn't want to put us down a road with a beloved figure that we didn't want to be on.
I'm glad.
But excellent. I would suggest that if listeners had a different casting based on Cage Club presentations, mm-hmm. Go ahead and tweet me and tell me who should play the heroes based on the Cage Club pantheon of stars. You won the game.
What's that?
I won the game.
Oh,
everyone wins during the pandemic.
Mr. Rogers would say we're all winners.
That's true.
Thanks for the game, Aslan. That was wonderful.
You're welcome. After the game is when we talk. When we give this our films their rating, is this progressive or regressive? Is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Tobin, what do you think?
I am tempted to say neutral, that it's not either, but I'm going to say a step forward, and here's why. Here is a movie about dudes, written by dudes. We named two producers, but there are, I think, eight named producers, most of whom are dudes. A lot of them was sort of where the money came from, I think. Like, it's a movie where there are a lot of dudes behind the scenes, and yet the movie bears the stamp of this woman director, and stands, I think, shoulder to shoulder, or maybe a little shorter, but like pretty much shoulder to shoulder in her, you know, small so far, just because she's only been making movies for a few years. I think for that reason, because I don't want us to be in a world where women make movies about women and men make movies about men, and there should be cross pollination in all kinds of ways, and that this movie is an example of that. I think is a little step forward. Well, Aizen, what do you think?
I absolutely agree with everything you said. However, when I was thinking about it earlier today and thinking about, is this, if I was looking for a movie or a clip of a movie that represented fearless women in front of and behind the camera, I just don't think this is what I would pick. Once you framed it for me with her other work, then it sort of made a little bit more sense as a movie to me, mm-hmm. rather than I had framed it with the other Fred Rogers piece. So it is a well-made movie. And like you say, the things that we're critiquing or that didn't really resonate for us weren't about the directing. Mm-hmm. However, it just would not be a place I would point to say, you know, here's fearless women. And so I am going to land on neutral.
Makes sense. Yep. Aislinn.
Tobin.
We're going to watch a movie for our next episode that I've never heard of before. We're going to watch Troop Zero, which you can find on Amazon Prime. We're going to try in the pandemic here to find easily accessible streaming titles for you to, for our, all our many listeners to be able to catch up with. So I know next to nothing about this movie apart from what I Googled before we started the episode. But another pair of women filmmakers. So I'm excited. So watch Troop Zero and come back on June 30th to hear our episode on Troop Zero. Cool. Aizen, do you want to be found online? And if so, how do people find you?
Sure. You can find me at SassyNerdMT on Twitter. As I recently said to someone, I do not have notifications on, so it'll take me a few days to see it likely, but say hello, tell me about your heroes. And I hope I'm not misjudging the size of our audience, but I am making masks. And so if folks would like, do not have a cloth mask that is washable that they want to wear, mine are tie. They're not elastic, just in case folks have preferences. And they're all made out of scraps from quilting. So they're all very bright and loud and optimistic. So if you're interested in a mask and tell us how much you like our podcast, I'll make you a mask.
And may I say, they are excellent masks. They easily cover,
they get the job done.
Nose big, to chin, yeah. But not like too big. It's not hanging off anywhere. You can turn your head to look around, and you can also, then the cool thing about it is that, let's say you've been into the grocery store and you've been shopping, and then you're not going anywhere else, so you can take off your mask now, but you don't want to touch your face because you haven't washed your hands yet because you're not home. You just reach up behind your head to the higher of the two knots that you've tied, pull it untied, and it flops down in front of you like you are a surgeon. And so you suddenly look
like a surgeon,
like a bib, yeah. And then suddenly you look cool, and maybe not quite as cool as you look when you were wearing the masks, because the masks are very cool, and because it's cool to wear a mask. But you then have this mask dangling in front, looks pretty cool, and you've not contaminated your face. So I'm a big fan.
And you can also just pull the bottom string and drop it in the washer, not having to touch the whole thing.
Boom.
Hey, Tobin, how about you? Can people find you online?
Sadly, I am online on Twitter a lot more these days. I have found it, not just sadly, I found it a way to keep up with people mid-pandemic. So yes, I'm on Twitter at Tobin Addington, all one word. So come say hello. And you can find us on Twitter at Contenders_pod. I have to be better about checking that. I've not been as good about checking one, but I'll get better. I promise. If you write to me there at Contenders_pod, I will see it and write back. You can also find us on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who've joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn and Jeff Addington. Woo, woo, woo. Seriously, thank you. And thank you to all our Patreon members, because this is how we are able to do this show, honestly. Like,
it's because of you that I can see Tobin every time now.
We can see each other. We pay for this service to be able to see each other. We pay to be able to edit this show and make it sound as nice as it usually does. So truly our sincere thanks. We love doing this show, and you make it possible. So you, if you're not a member, you can become a member today, connect with other listeners and support our show. Just go to thecontenderspod.com and you will learn all that wonderful information.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me. And you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. For instance, Tobin, did you know that I am a guest on two recent episodes of High School Slumber Party?
No. Did you hurt anyone?
I hope not.
Well, I don't know. So we went on to the Fast and Furious episode show, and I think we scarred people.
We did hurt
people.
Them in the feelings. We did. Yeah. There's an episode that's out now that came out in early May.
Yeah.
About Perks of Being a Wallflower, which is my favorite piece of fiction.
Yeah. Okay.
And in their cheerleading series, I will appear on the Fired Up episode, a film I've made Toe and watch.
Yes, you have.
I brought on another feminist friend of mine, which made me nervous because I was afraid they were going to take my card. But listen to that. See how it all turned out between the three of us on the Fired Up episode.
That sounds great.
Really, there's all kinds of fun stuff at cageclub.me. And like I said before, if you're on Twitter, look them up at Cage Club Pod to see what episodes are dropping and when.
And while you're there, you could go. Isla and I were guests on what's the cruise one called? I forget the name of them. Rock of Ages, but I don't know if you're looking for the show, what the show is called.
Cruise Club.
Is that what the show's called?
I have their shows up. Let's look.
Okay.
Yep. Hashtag Cruise Club.
There you go. Okay, Cruise Club. Okay, so on Cruise Club, Aislinn and I were guests on the Rock of Ages episode, which our mother, who loves the movie, has listened to multiple times, even though Aislinn and I very much do not like the movie.
It just brings her and Joey closer together.
It does. They have a history together, those two. So if you can't get enough of us, you can go there and check that one out.
As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Aislinn Addington.
I'm Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders. I did it again. Next time on the... I'm Tobin Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders. Can I tell you a kind of disgusting story?
Sure.
Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Well, let's go.
Are you ready?
I will after I take this drink.
Wow.
Now you do the as always. Thank you so much for listening.
Oh, I thought you were just going to insert that.
I mean, I could, but why? I'd rather make you do it again.
Sounds great. Even though you'll have to cut out all of this.
Yes.
Just to be clear. Okay.
Let's do the episode over again.
We did it with Widows.
Let's do it in one. We can do it in one.